live and local. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on, see that it says New Orleans on the front of it. I mean, it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live and direct from 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like to, you can give us a call. We're wide open. Hour number one, hour number two. Now, hour number three, we got not one but two guests. So if you want to get in, dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Cody Schutz, good morning to you, brother. How are you doing today?
Doing good. I'm excited. I'm ready. It's a short week, so... this Tuesday kind of feels like a Thursday.
It does. You're right.
Yeah, look at it. See, you, if only, I apologize. It's very early in the morning. It's only 6:05. Raymond's face just lit up like a Christmas tree. Like a Christmas tree, fam, whenever he realized that today, a Tuesday, is really kind of like Thursday.
It's kind of like a Thursday, yes.
Kind of like a Thursday.
Regardless if it's Tuesday, Thursday.
But it's kind of like a Thursday.
Or it's kind of like a Thursday. We got you covered with all things sports talk. We're going to get to some of the news that came out yesterday, including Coach Ed Orgeron adding a legend, one of the greatest coaches in history, to his staff in an advisory role. We'll also touch on what former Raging Cajun great Elfrid Payton did yesterday, secured his NBA future for at least the next 2 years, plus much, much more. But we're going to start off with the talk of the day, and that's NBA free agency. And more importantly, where the hell is Kawhi Leonard going? NBA free agency opened on Sunday. We're now Tuesday morning. And the most coveted free agent on the market, a two-time NBA Finals champion still in his prime, who just brought the city of Toronto and the country of Canada its first NBA World Championship, still is yet to make a decision. And that's interesting to me for a couple reasons. Tops on the list is typically your big domino has already fallen. It already happens in that first 24 to 36-hour period. And then everything else happens around it, right? All the other free agents or the agents representing those free agents, they all wait to see what the big free agent does because that'll affect everything. Because once a team misses out on signing Kawhi Leonard, they may turn around and then throw extra money or an extra year to a player that may not deserve it or may not warrant it on the open market, but because of desperation and because they need to field a team that's going to be competitive, they will then overpay other players. That's not the case right now. Right now, the most coveted free agent remains unsigned. just to recap what happened in the early hours of free agency, and can we just go ahead and that whole deadline and that whole issue with quote-unquote tampering, can we just get rid of that? You had more than $2 billion worth of deals done within the first 2 hours of free agency. So those deals were already in place between the teams and the agents and the players. So let's not pretend like, oh, free agency opened up at 6 o'clock on Sunday, and that's when they started making these deals. Nope. These deals had been in place for weeks, if not a month or more. So free agency began on Sunday at 6. Your big moves had to deal with a lot of the 76ers. They signed Al Horford to that four-year deal, more than $100 million. His name was bounced around as a possible target for the New Orleans Pelicans. I guarantee you, once David Griffin found out how much Al Horford and his agent wanted, they said no thank you, and they moved right along. But that was your big news coming out of day one involved the Philadelphia 76ers. They signed Al Horford. They re-signed Tobias Harris. They gave them both huge deals. They let Jimmy Butler walk. He ends up being traded to the Miami Heat, which was finalized yesterday. That took care of that. Also, of course, the Brooklyn Nets were the big winners on the first day of free agency. They poached Kevin Durant away. He walks away from the max, five-year max, super max deal from the Golden State Warriors. He signs with a four-year deal with the Brooklyn Nets. Kyrie Irving signs a four-year deal, and DeAndre Jordan, 3 years past his prime, DeAndre Jordan, but still DeAndre Jordan signs a four-year deal as well with the Brooklyn Nets. Kemba Walker leaves Charlotte to go to Boston. Actually like a lot of the moves that Boston's done. I think Kemba Walker is just a less complicated version of Kyrie Irving. Let's just put it that way. And then they went out and got Enes Kanter yesterday as their big. So they still got their core. They swapped out Kyrie Irving for Kemba Walker, and they swapped out Al Horford for Enes Kanter. So right off the bat, free agency was fast and furious. Dame Lillard and the Portland Trailblazers agreed to a supermax contract extension, $196 million for 4 years. I'll say that again. That's $196 million for 4 years. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, DeAndre Jordan, they head to Brooklyn Nets. Former Tiger Garrett Temple got himself a two-year, $10 million deal to go to the Brooklyn Nets as well. Brooke Lopez stayed, got $52 million to stay with the Milwaukee Bucks for four more years. Chris Middleton returned to the Milwaukee Bucks on a five-year, $178 million deal. Of course, we know what the Pels did. They went out there, they got their stretch four out of the EuroLeague. Then they signed sharpshooter J.J. Redick, poached them away from the Philadelphia 76ers. There was a lot of activity with 76ers players. And then they traded for Derek Favors late Sunday night, early Monday morning, the big fella from Utah. So all these names drop. The Celtics make moves. The 76ers make moves. The Brooklyn Nets make moves. Obviously, we know that the New Orleans Pelicans made moves. Hell, even the Sacramento Kings were making moves, re-signing Harrison Barnes to $85 million. Harrison Barnes got $85 million. Derrick Rose, who's got no cartilage left in his knees, got a two-year, $15 million deal to play for the Detroit Pistons. Money left and right being thrown around. But yet, nothing on Kawhi Leonard. Also, nothing on Danny Green. Now, remember Danny Green, salty veteran, can play defense. He struggled in the playoffs with his shot, in particular his three-point shot. But Danny Green was part of that Kawhi Leonard trade to the Toronto Raptors. Danny is on an expiring contract as well. Him and Kawhi were in the same boat. That's why Toronto made the deal. Danny Green's waiting to see what Kawhi Leonard does. Because Green very well may just follow Kawhi Leonard where he goes. Bogdanovich signs that $73 million deal with the Utah Jazz. That helped free up Derek Favors to be able to be traded to the New Orleans Pelicans. Kristaps Porzingis' five-year, $158 million max deal with the Dallas Mavericks is fully guaranteed. Dallas didn't even push for an injury protection. He missed all of last season while rehabbing a torn ACL. A guy who missed all of last year with a torn ACL just got a five-year, $158 million deal. The NBA is brimming with stupid money. Even minor players like Ricky Rubio going to the Phoenix Suns, Rodney Hood staying with the Portland Trailblazers. All these deals were made. The New York Knicks, they signed Julius Randle, who spent last year, as we know, with the New Orleans Pelicans. Gave him a three-year deal worth $63 million. Signed Taj Gibson to a $20 million deal. But nothing on Kawhi Leonard. Everyone else is getting paid. Everyone else, there's trades being made. There's guys signing contract extensions. There's guys signing $90 million, $145 million deals. And all this is going along, is going on, while the biggest name in free agency has yet to make his decision. It's curious. Even the Golden State Warriors, who locked up Klay Thompson yesterday, gave him that Supermax five-year, $190 million deal. He's coming off a torn ACL. He'll miss at least until March. But they locked up the Splash Brother. They're bringing in D'Angelo Russell, which I think is a smart deal. People go, well, how's D'Angelo Russell? He needs to have the ball, everything like this. They'll find a way. Steve Kerr's smart enough. He'll know how to use D'Angelo Russell. They'll just play three guards and Draymond Green on the floor and just run up and down the court, similar to what they did when they won an NBA championship without Kevin Durant. Paul Gasol is looking to come back to the NBA, possibly reunite with his brother. Even Isaiah Thomas has agreed to a one-year deal to play for the Washington Wizards. But no Kawhi Leonard. Also, surprisingly, DeMarcus Cousins hasn't signed with anyone. Is the big fellow waiting to see what happens with Kawhi Leonard? Could DeMarcus Cousins go reunite with Anthony Davis and play in Los Angeles? Oh, and the Lakers still don't have that third superstar that we all told that they were going to be getting. Reports are Kawhi Leonard, his finalists are the Toronto Raptors, LA Clippers, LA Lakers. But I've also saw reports when I woke up this morning that Kawhi, his decision could take a couple more days, maybe three, maybe 4 days. He'll just, you know, he's just lounging. He's like, what's up? He's like, what's up? Oh, y'all want a decision for me? Nah, I'm going to take my time. I don't care what your timeline is. So all this money's being thrown around in the NBA. All these guys are getting super max contracts. All these teams are throwing hundreds of million dollars at top-tier players and, let's be honest, second-tier, third-tier players in the association. And all of this is being done without the reigning finals MVP and the most coveted free agent on the market having made a decision on where he's going to play. It's an interesting time in the NBA right now. When we come back, we'll talk about what former Raging Cajun star Elfrid Payton, what decision he made yesterday. He locked up his future for the next 2 years. We'll talk about it. right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Let off today's show talking about NBA free agency, how stupid money is just being passed out left and right. Even fourth tier guys are getting picked up. Frank the Tank just got a 2-year deal with the Phoenix Suns. And if you're the Los Angeles Lakers, because I think the Clippers are in better shape and so are the Raptors, and you only have three guys under contract right now and you don't get Kawhi Leonard, and then you're going to turn around and try to piece together a team to go with LeBron James, Kyle Kuzma, and Anthony Davis, good luck, because even the fourth tier guys are getting 2 to 3 year deals. There may not be any players for the Lakers to sign to fill out a roster as they try to sign yet another Supermax contract. Yesterday, though, it was a good day for the former Raging Cajun star, Elfrid Payton. We talked about it on yesterday's show that he understands that this is a business. He talked about it at his kickball tournament over the weekend, that, you know, he'd love to stay in New Orleans. He is from Gretna. He went to school here in the state at UL. Was a great Raging Cajun ball player for Bob Marlin. And that he enjoyed his time in New Orleans. He had that great run of 5 consecutive triple-doubles. He tied the franchise mark for most triple-doubles in a season with Chris Paul. But Elfrid dealt with some injuries. But he very much understood, as much as he wanted to come back to New Orleans, and as much as a lot of the fans would love to have him come back and play for the Pels again, that this was a business. And with all the complete overhaul that David Griffin, Vice President of Basketball Operations, has done with this franchise, that there may not be a spot for Elfrid Payton. And not to mention that when healthy, he shows great potential and he has flashes of what he can do. And there's going to be a team out there in the association that's going to covet him to be on their team, either as a starter or as a backup. Well, that's exactly what happened. As the former Raging Cajun star and lottery pick agreed to a 2-year, $16 million deal with the New York Knicks. Once again, his assist-to-turnover ratio was nearly 3-1 last year. The 6'4" guard, his assist percentage last year and over his career is higher than any Knicks player last season. So if you're the Knicks and you got egg all over your face because you didn't even bother to offer Kevin Durant a max contract, you didn't win the lottery. You don't win the lottery. You trade Kristaps Porzingis to increase your chances of winning the lottery. You do not win the lottery in Zion Williamson. You do not get Kevin Durant. You do not get Kyrie Irving. You do not get any big-time free agent. You did get R.J. Barrett in the draft. You stayed put. He's going to be a good player. You signed Julius Randle, a guy that can be nearly a double-double guy. He's not going to be an all-star, but he's a good player. You signed him on the first day of free agency. You signed Taj Gibson, a salty veteran who can play defense. And now you add a point guard. The New York Knicks are going to be R.J. Barrett's team. And they just added Julius Randle, a guy who can average double-double. They added a veteran guy in Taj Gibson. And then they add Elfrid Payton, who can run the point for them. The Knicks have already added some shooters as well in Reggie Bullock and Wayne Ellington. So Payton really won't be needed to be a three-point shooter, which is not his game. Elfrid likes to slash to the basket, and he likes to distribute. He can also steal the ball. He also plays pretty good defense. So, Elfrid Payton, even though he doesn't get to stay at home and play for the hometown team, he did get to play a year for the hometown team. He got the triple-double record, most consecutive triple-doubles, at tied a record in NBA history that is shared with the likes of Russell Westbrook, Wilt Chamberlain, Oscar Robertson, Michael Jeffrey Jordan. That's pretty damn good, right? And yeah, it was a lost season, and Elfrid had to deal with not one but two different injuries, but he still got to play, and he played well when he was healthy, and he got to play for the hometown team, and now he's on to his fourth team in his career. Started off being drafted as a rookie lottery pick by the Orlando Magic, earned all rookie team honors, then was traded to the Phoenix Suns, lasted there for half a season, left in free agency to sign a one-year deal with the New Orleans Pelicans. And obviously he did enough to prove to other teams that he is a valuable asset. And now he's entering becoming a veteran player in this league as he signs the two-year deal worth $16 million. And if you're the Knicks, and I know Knicks fans have burned down their houses and they're ready to bomb Madison Square Garden, this team is going to be probably better than people think. Julius Randle is a good player. Not a great player, but a good player. Him and Elfrid played together last year, so there's some familiarity there. You had a guy, a veteran like Taj Gibson, and then you got the young man, the sensational young man, R.J. Barrett. I'll be interested to see how Elfrid Payton and Julius Randle, both two former Pelicans, play next year in Madison Square Garden. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll switch from the hardwood to the gridiron. LSU, Ed O, adding yet another mind to his staff. A Hall of Famer, a legend. We'll talk about it here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us, though, on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to give us a call, pick up the phone. Dial 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. That's the ARCO Equipment Hotline. I want to talk a little LSU football. And I will give credit to Coach Ed Orgeron. He is not afraid of filling up his staff with experienced people or people that may bring a different opinion to the table. We know him and Matt Canada did not get along. Philosophies did not mesh. And that was a marriage that was not going to work from Jump Street. But since then, he's very much allowed Dave Aranda to run the defense, not interfere there. They have given a raise to Corey Raymond, one of the most coveted defensive back coaches in the country. Might be the best DB coach in the country from New Iberia. He brought back his buddy Steve Ingsminger, promoted him. They just added Joe Brady away from the Saints, young, dynamic, offensive-minded guy. They created a position for him, essentially, made him the passing game coordinator. And now they've added yet another person to the staff, and this one's a big one. John Robinson, a college football Hall of Famer, the longtime head coach at Southern Cal and with the Los Angeles Rams, is joining the staff, according to a release by LSU, as a senior consultant to head coach Ed Orgeron. Robinson served as head coach at Southern Cal from 1976 to 1982, and then again from 93 to 97. He led the Trojans to the 1978 National Championship and five Pac-10 championships. in between those two stints with the Trojans. He was the head coach of the Rams, leading that franchise to the playoffs six times, including two appearances in the NFC Championship game. Orgeron said in a statement, quote, "I want to welcome Coach Robinson and his wife, Miss Beverly, to the LSU family," end quote. He continued saying, quote, Coach has been a great friend and mentor to me and would be a very valuable resource for us growing our championship culture at LSU," end quote. According to the release by LSU, Robinson will assist Orgeron as a consultant to daily planning of practice, personnel, and game planning. Robinson won 132 games as a head coach in college. Won 75 regular season games in the NFL. He was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2009. The Trojans were always ridiculously talented and good underneath him. He knew how to recruit. He was the National Coach of the Year. And then when he came back after his tenure with the Rams ended, he decided to come back to college. He had instant success. He led USC to Pac-10 titles in 93 and 95. Won more than 100 games in his 12 seasons at USC. Four Rose Bowl victories and a Cotton Bowl victory. Robinson's 8-1 bowl record ranks first all-time in college football history in terms of winning percentage. He had 18 players earn first-team All-American honors, with two of them winning the Heisman Trophy. Charles White in 79 and running back and future Super Bowl MVP and Pro Football Hall of Famer Marcus Allen in 1981. After USC, he went on to coach at UNLV. In 1999, he led the Rebels to a win in the Las Vegas Bowl, and he was named the Mountain West Conference Coach of the Year in 2000, and he remains the second winningest coach in UNLV history. I have my own thoughts on this, but I want to get the in-house Tiger fan to comment here. Cody Schutz, when you hear that a College Football Hall of Famer, one of the best to ever do it, a national champion, a man who's coached not one but two Heisman Trophy winners, and won on the biggest stage at one of the biggest schools, most tradition-rich programs in history, is now going to serve as a senior consultant to Coach Ed Orgeron. What are your thoughts?
Allow me to, you know, give full disclosure here. John Robinson is not necessarily a name that I'm familiar with.
A little before your time,
yeah.
Yes.
So I didn't know when I read the name, you know, I don't know what I think about it. And then I go through and I start to see the resume and read through the article and I see, okay, he's a USC guy, but a West Coast USC guy. He's got NFL experience, and not just NFL experience, but he's a head coach mm-hmm. in the NFL. And then when you look
coach
at
Coach Eric Dickerson.
Right, making the playoffs a half dozen times, making the conference championship game two times, that right there, there's nothing to shake a stick at there. So, and then also his connection to USC, he had two different stints mm-hmm. With the Trojans. We all know Coach O has a history with USC as well.
Two separate stints, yep.
But I wonder if there's some kind of link there, if him and John Robinson crossed paths when Coach O was at USC, and maybe there is some kind of pre-built relationship there that brought him to LSU and to Coach Orgeron. But anytime Coach O, who, fair or not, has received criticism for maybe not being the best X's and O's guy. Yes, world-class motivator and leader of young men. World-class recruiter, and he's great getting families to buy into what he's selling. But he does catch some criticism here and there for drawing up a good offensive play or whatever have you. I love the fact that Coach O is surrounding himself with as many mentors or, you know, teachers, whatever you want to call them, guys like John Robinson that are going to be there to consult with Coach O. The more people around him he can put to help with what I think is his biggest hurdle, and that being just the X's and O's for Coach O is a good thing from my standpoint.
How funny is it that on yesterday's show, a topic of discussion, we made it a poll question, was, do you believe that Coach O is, you know, the 51st
right.
best coach in college football and the 8th best in the SEC? And we had we discussed it, you and I did on the show, and then we asked Jeff Palermo from the Louisiana Radio Network about it as well. And there's still this knock on Coach O, despite what he's done at LSU, and despite what he did as an interim coach at USC, that he can't coach because what happened back in the day at Ole Miss. Okay? He was awful at Ole Miss. Let's just call it what it was. He was an absolute train wreck as a head coach for the Rebels. He could recruit his tail off, but he couldn't coach worth a damn. Just couldn't. He did not know how to divvy up power. He was known for being overly animated and focusing on the kids and recruiting them, but the game plan, the playbook, was a train wreck, and he got out-coached every single game. Okay? And he had to humble himself. But then look what he did at USC after they got rid of, you know, Kiffin and Skarsgård back-to-back. And he was there. Look, we all know what Coach O can do better than anyone. That's recruit, and particularly recruit defensive linemen. Okay? That's his bread and butter. That's what he did so well for Miami under Jimmy Johnson winning a national championship. That's what he did at USC under Pete Carroll winning national championships. Okay? This is what he knows how to do. I think he's learned how to become a better coach over the years. I think he's learned that as an interim coach there at USC, and I think he's learned it at LSU taking over for Les Miles. Have there been bumps in the road? Absolutely. You don't lose to a Sun Belt team in Troy at home. Okay? You don't get curb stomped by Mississippi State. Those are embarrassing losses that are on the resume. But he was able to turn things around. And he's a great motivator, right? He's the rah-rah coach, right, Cody? He's the guy. Everything was so negative about the team last year with the quarterbacks transferring out and the preseason polls saying that they were the 5th best team in the SEC West and that he was on the hot seat and they had all those distractions. He was great. That's what O is great about. He's a great game day. Let's get fired up, drink Red Bull, smash it on top of my head. Let's run out of Tiger Stadium. Hold that Tiger. Gets after it, recruits. But he needs smart people around him that know how to coach. That's why they have made Dave Aranda the highest paid coordinator in all of college football. And they continue to make that happen year in and year out by giving him raises. You bring in Joe Brady to help run the offense for your boy Steve Ensminger to help it more, make it more dynamic finally. O's going to be the leader. He's going to be your cheerleader on game day. He's going to be the recruiter, okay? It seems like he's finally letting his coaches coach, let Dave Aranda coach the defense, let Joe Brady and Steve Ensminger coach the offense. Now, I do have questions about bringing on John Robinson. The way college football was played in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and the way the NFL was played in the 80s. Did you notice a lot of the highlights there, Cody? He coached two Heisman Trophy winners, running backs. He coached Eric Dickerson in the NFL, Hall of Fame running back. That's not the way the game's played.
No.
Right? This is not line up, let your big offensive lineman take care of business and run the ball. Have your lead running back carry it 30 times a game. That's not the way the game is played. So, how much influence, how much impact is John Robinson going to have when it comes to the playbook? I'm going to say absolutely zero, Cody. I think John Robinson is being brought on to help make Coach O, to mentor Coach O to become a better overall coach. I think John Robinson is going to teach him how to further give up responsibility, let your assistants,
which you have some of the best in the nation.
And I think Coach O does well with the media, okay?
He's a media darling, I think.
His style works. It can be a little abrasive when someone asks him, you know, dumbass question. He gives them that look.
What makes Coach O abrasive, and that this is only being...
But it works because he's honest, right?
Only being in the room one time watching Coach O, you know, back and forth with the media, he makes eye contact with whoever he's talking to. No matter where you're at in the room, the front, the back, sitting, standing off the, He stares at you. He looks you in the eye the whole time he's talking to you. And it can be, if you're not ready for it, it can be a little aggressive or a break. But, I mean, he's...
That's a great trick to use for recruiting, by the way. Because he can look the parents right in the eye. And he can look the recruit right in the eye.
Right.
And that makes a big difference, right? Because it seems more personal. I like Coach O. I think he's done a good job. I think John Robinson is, and I think the connection that you're looking for there is, I don't believe they're on a staff together, Cody, but I think when he took over and when he was back at USC, John Robinson still has a connection to USC. So I think that's how that worked, and he probably got to know John Robinson.
Right, not in any official capacity,
right,
but just crossing paths in the building or something.
But having John Robinson there on game day, just let's say the extent of John Robinson's influence is going to be having breakfast with Coach O every morning.
Right.
And talking about the opponent coming up and preparation and how to deal with that kind of offense. Just that sharing of knowledge can't hurt. Right? It can't hurt. It can only help.
And now Coach O, if he does come up across some sort of speed bump or something on any given week throughout the season, oh man, you know, I wonder what's the best way to handle this. I've got option A, option B, option C. I'm not sure where to go.
He can depend on.
Hey, John,
on, right?
I've got this situation. Here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? And still Coach O's choice, but now he's got something, someone to bounce ideas off of, and not just someone, but a very highly touted someone.
Think of it almost like a mentor, right? Because
it's a coach for the coach.
A coach for the coach, because the other guys on the staff, Dave Aranda's never been a head coach. He's a younger coach. Corey Raymond is a younger position coach.
Right.
Brady, they brought over from the Saints, is a younger position coach. So he's got a lot of talented, hardworking, genius kind of guys in place.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have that elder statesman that has been through this and has been a head coach at multiple locations, has had peaks and valleys to deal with,
right,
has had to deal with some big names and egos and pressure situations, because that USC job is a pressure job. We know that, and we've seen how
especially
well people...
Especially back in the 70s.
Well, and we've seen how well people have dealt with that pressure since Pete Carroll left.
Right.
It's been a train wreck,
not
right?
So well.
No one can handle being the head coach at USC because the spotlight's on you because you are LA's team. I think it's a home run. I think it's great, and I find it amusing that the day after Athlon Sports says that this guy's only the eighth best coach in his own conference behind Will Muschamp and Mark Stoops, that LSU releases the statement, oh, by the way, we've hired a Hall of Fame coach as a special consultant just to Coach O.
Will you not check on that poll question when we get back? Not an interesting result, but I'll give you the result. We'll tell you. You can find the poll question, 1037thegame.com. Go vote on it now. We'll check in on that in this next segment here. Ray, I think you might be interesting. I like the conversation we're having here.
I do, too. I do, too. That's why we work so well together, Cody Shields. We'll wrap up hour number one when we come back here on RP3 and Company. You're listening to 2 Acadiana's Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1, free over the air, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Cody Shoots, we gave the people a poll question yesterday. You asked the people before the break to please go vote on said poll question again, if they hadn't already done so.
I feel like the story from today has kind of extended this poll question a little bit.
I would agree to that. It's giving it a little bit more life. So I will say this before we get to the poll question.
Mm-hmm.
People knock O because he's not a genius with X's and O's. But being a great coach is not always about technique and about X's and O's. You can be a great coach and a great leader of a program if you let other people handle the X's and O's, and you can just be the motivator and the recruiter. You can be immensely successful as a head coach that way. You don't have to be a savant, a genius. That's what you pay coordinators for, okay? I will say that. The poll question, Cody, is what, sir? And what are our results as of right now at 6:55 a.m. on this glorious, beautiful Tuesday morning?
Over on 1037thegame.com, we have the poll question up. Do you think Coach O is better than the 51st best coach in college football? because as RP3's been telling us, Athlon Sports says that he is not.
He's also, they say, he's the eighth best coach in the SEC, which is a little ridiculous.
Right. We've got over 22 votes in on this already. 95.5% say, yes, he is better than 51st best coach. So far, a landslide maximum victory for Coach O being better than where Athlon Sports has him ranked. I fall into that giant 95% category.
Is he top three? No.
No, of course not. I said it yesterday. He's like top 30. He's like top 30.
He's top 30. Is he top three in the SEC? No.
Probably not.
No. Saban, Jimbo, they're there.
Dan Mullen.
Kirby Smart. Okay. You put those are your top four. But then when you get to 5, 6, 7, and 8, Gus Malzahn has played for a national championship as a head coach. He's also been on the hot seat every single damn year, and they want to run him out of Auburn, okay? Would you be surprised if Auburn wins 5 games this year and Gus Malzahn gets fired? No. You wouldn't. I like Mark Stoops, and he did a tremendous job last year at Kentucky. Nothing to taking away from him of what he was able to do. But he was awful for a couple years before then. There's talk of him being run off before last year. Okay? And Will Muschamp? I saw Will Muschamp coach at Florida. The stage was too big for him. He's done okay at South Carolina. But South Carolina's not going to be in the mix for the college football playoff. O should be 6 or 5, not 8, in his own damn conference. And he should be ranked higher than 51st. If you haven't voted yet, go to the 103.7 The Game homepage, 103.7thegame.com. You'll find our poll question on the right-hand side down at the bottom. Make sure to vote. That's going to do it for hour number one. Hour number two coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
At $13 million, which is what he's getting here, mm-hmm. He probably could have gone to 7 or 8 different teams, which leads me to believe that he had a complete array. All those teams would have wanted him, especially on a 2-year deal. If he was saying, I'm only taking 4 years, that would have narrowed his market. This deal indicates he was wide open. Mm-hmm. For him to pick this team is an incredible vote of confidence in where the Pelicans are going. And, by the way, the Pelicans are going to be good this year.
Absolutely.
Like, regardless of where Zion is, I think he sees them as really good this year and really good in the next couple of years. I think this is a tremendous vote of confidence, not only for where Zion's going to be, but for the overall management. It's a vote of confidence for all their young players, where they're going to go, plus the extra draft picks that they have. Mm-hmm. This was one of the few things that that actually made my jaw drop. Hmm. Brogdon and this were the two moves that I'm really surprised with.
Good morning and welcome to hour number two of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's better known as the Stadium Network, okay? 24 hours of sports coverage, free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We led off today's show talking about NBA free agency, how stupid money is being passed out left and right, and Kawhi Leonard has yet to make a decision. He's the biggest name on the free agent market, and he hasn't made a decision. So if you're one of those teams, talking to you, Clippers and Lakers, and you don't lock up Kawhi Leonard, you're going to have a tough time fielding a roster because they are third and fourth tier guys right now getting 2 to 3 year deals and getting paid. The market is drying up fast. Super fast. We also talked about former New Orleans Pelicans starting point guard Elfrid Payton, former Raging Cajun star. He signed a two-year deal yesterday to go play with the New York Knicks. He'll be reunited with Julius Randle, who he played with last year with the Pelicans, because Randle signed a big-time deal worth more than $60 million to sign with the Knicks as well. But I want to talk a little bit about the Pels. And that audio that you heard coming out of the break was, of course, Brian Windhorst of the Mothership talking about the New Orleans Pelicans signing J.J. Redick and how that was a surprising move, but how it was a great move. And I agree with that.
And Windhorst may be saying it's a surprising move because it may have something to do with just 1 month ago, this was J.J. Redick.
I'd love to be back. I mean, that's I haven't, you know, tried to hide that at all. I'd love to be back with the Sixers. You know, I'd love to finish my career.
That was 1 month ago.
Philly is changing how they do things. I'm not really for sure what's going on there. They bring in Al Horford. They re-signed Tobias Harris. So you got two guys that play the four spot. They're going to be on the court at the same time. Is Ben Simmons going to be your point guard moving forward? He can't shoot. Ben Simmons has yet to make a three-pointer. Ben Simmons has yet to make a three-point shot. And they're talking about giving him a supermax contract. So you got Joel Embiid, always hurt. Tobias Harris, Al Horford. Al Horford's like 33 years old. You let Jimmy Butler walk, who was perfect for that town and for that franchise. But apparently Ben Simmons didn't like him, because Ben Simmons is all up in his feelings. So Butler's now headed to Miami, and they let their sharpshooter guy, their best shooter on the team, their two best shooters on the team are now gone. You don't get better by losing your two best shooters. And you know good and well J.J. Redick had interest from probably half a dozen other teams. Some of those contenders needing a veteran three-point shooter to come in, maybe off the bench. Your teams are always looking at that. Hell, the Lakers could have used someone like that. The Clippers, he could have gone back to the Clippers and played with Doc Rivers again. It probably more than half a dozen teams, probably a dozen teams in the association probably would have coveted J.J. Redick. Yet he chose the Pels. That tells me a lot. That tells me a lot about the culture. Now, helping in that factor, of course, is the Duke connection. J.J. Redick has a friendship with Trenton Langdon, who's now the GM of the New Orleans Pelicans, formerly with the Brooklyn Nets. He was a Duke star player himself. And we joked about it on yesterday's show that the Pels now can trot out a starting five of former Duke players. Okay? It's Tobacco Road in New Orleans now. So that played a role. But he also probably likes the fact that he's going to be the elder statesman on this team. Apparently him and Drew Holiday have a friendship as well. So you could see him and Drew kind of providing that veteran leadership, and JJ can be counted on to do one thing. Redick, we need you to come in and shoot the three ball. Okay. He's been there, done that. He's a playoff veteran. He's a far better pro than I ever thought he was going to be. I thought he was going to be one of those Duke guys that would come into the league and kind of flame out. They have a lot of those guys. For a program that's been so elite for so long, they've had a couple of guys come into the league that have just been kind of mediocre. Now, I thought J.J. Redick had that written all over him. I've been surprised. He's a far better pro than he was in college, and he was a very good college player. But to get someone like J.J. Redick to come in, and then you trade for Derek Favors. Whew. And you got all that young talent. All those guys 24 years and younger. And you got your face of your franchise, which will be Zion Williamson. Your leader will be Drew Holiday. The face of the franchise is Zion Williamson. So now you're going to have Derek Favors starting at center. He's going to mentor Hayes, the young man out of Texas that you drafted in the top 10 who needs a little grooming. And can go ahead and mentor Okafor, who you brought back right before the start of the draft a couple weeks ago. He played admirably for the Pels last season. So now you got Derek Favors. He's going to be your starting five. He's going to develop, help mentor Hayes and Okafor, your future bigs. He's also probably going to mentor, to a certain degree, Zion Williamson. And Derek Favors being out on the court is going to help make Zion Williamson's life so much easier. So you're going to have Favors. Then you're going to have Zion at the four spot. You're going to have the big Euro guy that they got, the stretch four, backing up Zion now, coming off the bench. Your three spot, your small forward spot, will be held by Brandon Ingram. Now, he doesn't have to be the pressure and to be the guy in L.A. He can be, hell, Brandon Ingram's not even going to be the guy that, he's going to be the guy that's going to be, what, the fourth guy on this team? You're going to think of Zion Williamson. You're going to think of Drew Holiday. You're probably going to think Derek Favors, then Brandon Ingram. How much is, how good is that going to be for Brandon Ingram just to kind of be just a guy on the team and be able to develop? You'll have Lonzo at the point guard. You'll have Drew Holiday at the number two. You have the young man that you took out of Vitek backing up Drew. Josh Hart can play both the one or the two, but typically he's more of a two-spot guard. He's more of a shooting guard. So you got some depth coming off the bench there. Oh, and now you got J.J. Redick. You can come off the bench and play the two-spot as well for you, or you can line him up and he can give Brandon Ingram a breather and play the forward, because Redick is big enough that he can play the two or the three. And you got a guy that can come off the bench and shoot the three. That sure does sound like a playoff team to me. And I don't think the Pels are done. I think there's probably going to be another kind of very under-the-radar minor move that they still are going to be making.
That's what I was going to add. On the level of J.J. Redick, or
no, maybe not that level.
Yeah.
No. Signing J.J. Redick and trading for Derek Favors. And you know what's great about that Derek Favors trade? We didn't get into this yesterday. David Griffin used free money. The extra pick they had during the draft in the second round that they traded to the Golden State Warriors, they got two picks back from the Warriors. Both of them are second-round picks. Both of them are future second-round picks in the next 3 years, 3 to 4 years, Cody. So they got a pick. The extra second-round pick came from the trade with the Atlanta Hawks. They took that pick, flipped it into two picks for the Golden State Warriors, and then took those two free picks and got a starter. Think about it like that. Someone gave you free money, and you turned it into like $100,000. Someone gave you $100. Hey, here's $100. And you flipped it into $100,000. That's essentially what the Pels did there.
Went all Warren Buffett on them over there.
Phenomenal. Just absolutely. I think there will be another, but it won't be the level of Derek Favors trading for him or J.J. Redick. It could be another sneaky move like they did right at the start of free agency where they signed the big fella, the stretch four, out of the EuroLeague. Something like that, Cody, is what I'd expect in the next week or so. But they're going to go with their young core. Now they got some veterans, Drew Holiday, J.J. Redick, Derek Favors. Don't know if Etuan Moore is going to stay on this team. We talked about it yesterday with Andrew Lopez. Maybe that's someone that sticks around. Maybe they don't. Maybe that's someone that they trade away, dump, to be able to get someone bigger. Because what role is Etuan Moore going to have on this team? Frank Jackson's got a role on this team because he can shoot. And Etuan Moore is 30 years old.
I was about to say that right now, Etuan Moore is the old guy on the team. And by, he's not old, but he's guy on the team.
Yeah, he's the second oldest guy now behind J.J. because J.J. Redick's 34, 35 years old.
But he's the new, he's a newcomer. I mean,
yeah, he's the newcomer, but Etuan's the...
That's an interesting dynamic. When the most veteran guy or most seasoned guy as far as years on the court, dribbles of a basketball, when the most seasoned guy on your team is... absolutely new, never been a part of this franchise.
That's interesting. But I like that because you have so much young talent that's just now getting to New Orleans. Your three guys that you got from the Lakers and then all the three first-round picks that you got this year. So you got to think of it like that, Cody. You have six new guys that have never played for the Pels that are under the age of 24. So to them, you know what I'm saying? Like, to them, they don't know anything. This is all brand new for them. So they're going to – they just know J.J. Redick is some guy that they've seen in the playoffs shoot three-pointers. So they're going to respond to him. You understand what I'm saying? So that actually works out pretty well like that. But I expect Derek Favors to be – I still can't believe the Derek Favors move. That's just so sneaky. So sneaky good. By the way, reminder to everyone out there that David Griffin turned down the Knicks because the New York Knicks in the past couple years offered David Griffin and tried to hire him to be their vice president of basketball operations, and he turned them down and instead is now with the New Orleans Pelicans. Someone chose to come to New Orleans over the Mecca of basketball, and that's why you see the Pels being constructed like they are, and that's why they're able to get trades like they're doing, and that's why they're getting free agents to sign with them, is because of that. David Griffin has made a huge difference. We got to hit a break. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, I want to talk a little baseball, a little Houston Astros baseball, and then a special holiday that occurred yesterday that we did not have time to talk about. Cody already knows what it is. Yes! Show him the money sign. We'll talk about it when we come back right here on KDN Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game and KDN Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Russell Simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Houston Astros were off yesterday. They will return to action tonight, and you can listen to it live right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Astros at Rockies. 6:30 pregame Astro launch. It'll be at 6:30. First pitch at 7:10. That's a short little two-game set at the Colorado Rockies. The second game of that series will be played Wednesday. Five Guys Stories and Lies will take you right up to first pitch. It'll be 6 to 7:10 for Five Guys Stories and Lies. And then Astros at Rockies first pitch at 7:10 on Wednesday. And then they'll wrap up the regular season prior to the All-Star break with a three-game set this weekend at home at Minute Maid versus the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Mike Trout and company come to town for three-game sets starting on July 5th, 6th, and the 7th. We'll have all three of those games for you as well right here on 103.7 The Game. The Astros are sending six players to the Midsummer Classic this year held at Progressive Field in Cleveland. We already knew about the starters. Two of the starting outfielders for the American League are going to be Astros and Michael Brantley, who they poached away from the Cleveland Indians during the offseason, as well as Springer Dinger, George Springer. And then Alex Bregman, former LSU star, is going to be the starting third baseman. They added three more over the weekend and yesterday. All are pitchers. Justin Verlander, who we expected. He's the leading candidate for the AL Cy Young. Gerrit Cole, who's having a great year as well. And Ryan Pressly. Verlander, a former Cy Young Award winner, former MVP, a World Series champion, being asked, what was it like being named to yet another All-Star team? And this is what Mr. Kate Upton had to say.
You know, I think it's one of those things that earlier on in my career, after going to a few in a row, you kind of start to take it for granted. And then, after some injuries and some down years and missing it for a few years in a row, I think it gave me a new appreciation for how much I enjoy these games and really just the enjoyment of being selected by your peers and having the opportunity to go represent your ball club yourself. In the game of baseball in such a big manner, it's an opportunity and a blessing.
Verlander was also asked how much it would mean for him to be able to actually start the All-Star game for the American League.
I mean, obviously that's pretty special. Had the opportunity to do it before. So it's a pretty unique event. It's a very different feeling. But it was a lot of fun.
Verlander was expected, not as much as expected was Gerrit Cole getting the call to go to the All-Star game. It's his third All-Star game. Once again, we talked about on yesterday's show, he's sneaky good. He's just sneaky good. When you talk about the best pitchers in the American League, you don't think of Gerrit Cole right off the bat. Yet, here he is going to his third All-Star game. This is what the Houston Astros' number two ace had to say about him going to the Midsummer Classic.
What's really unique about our system is that for the starting pitchers, you have to be voted in by the players, and actually for all pitchers in general. So when you're selected, it's really humbling to know that, you know, the rest of the professional baseball world respects what you do. And, you know, I take my vote seriously when I cast them for other starting pitchers. And so it means a lot. It's really special. It's really unique and very humbling.
Means a lot. It's very humbling for him. But as I said before, the Astros sent three position players to the Midsummer Classic, three of those being starters. They also sent three pitchers. Ryan Pressly, coming out of the bullpen, he's making his first All-Star game in Cleveland. This is what that young man had to say.
Oh, man, it's awesome. It's, you know, it's an honor to be selected and to have it done by some of the players and the coaches around the league. It's a huge honor. I'm very thankful for it.
So the Houston Astros are sending three position players and three pitchers to the All-Star game. That's the most of any team in the Major League Baseball. It's also the third straight year that they're sending six Astros to compete in the All-Star game, which will be next week there at Progressive Field in Cleveland. The Astros got over that lull that they were experiencing where they lost 8 of 10. They did so by sweeping the Seattle Mariners. Remember when the Seattle Mariners were considered a good team? Remember when people were talking about them as being a contender in the American League West in like the second week of April? Yeah, they're under 500. Thank you. Moving on. And they've already traded some of their players. It's not even the All-Star break yet. The Astros swept the Seattle Mariners over the weekend. Now they're a 53-win team. They hold, as we played our great game yesterday, how many games in first place are the Houston Astros? And I guess 6.5. And that was, in fact, correct. Over the Texas Rangers, who are hanging around. The Tejas Rangers are hanging around. They're not going anywhere. So we're interested to see. I still think that the Astros need to make a move before the trade deadline, bringing in maybe another veteran arm to that rotation because it's a little shaky on the back end. Colin McHugh's not a starter. I would say Peacock's not a starter either. He's probably better served in the bullpen. So you got your 1-2, you got your Verlander, you got Cole, you got Wade Miley, the former Southeastern Lions star. He's your 3, but you really don't have a 4th. Now, in the postseason, you don't need one, but, boy, down the home stretch to hold off the Tejas Rangers, probably would like to pick up another veteran arm. Maybe that's Madison Bumgarner, maybe it's not. But I think the Astros need to make a move there. Once again, Astros will be back on 103.7 The Game tonight. You can listen to it live right here. Pre-game show Astro Launch will begin at 6:30. The good brother Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, will take you from 4 to 6:30 into Astro Launch, and then after that, first pitch at 7:10 for Astros at Rockies.
It's interesting the Astros seem to be in a similar spot they were a couple of years back when they're first starting their World Series runs, where they needed to add a veteran, you know, good arm. So they added Justin Verlander. And now we're in a situation with Verlander and Cole, and now again looking for that third arm.
You can never not have enough arms.
Damn you, Dallas Keuchel.
That holiday that we were talking about yesterday, we're going to get to it. We're going to save it for you, too, at the very end of this hour. We're going to come back to it. It's a very special holiday in Major League Baseball that occurred yesterday. When we come back, we're going to go back to Thibodeau, talk a little bit more about Manning Passing Academy, put the spotlight on some of those guys that play in the Southland here in the state of Louisiana. When we come back here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Coming up in hour number three, we got not one but two guests. Ron Higgins from Tiger Details is going to join us talking all things LSU football, basketball. We'll touch on it all with our good buddy Ron Higgins. That'll be at 8:02. Also in hour number three at 8:32, Les East. We usually have him on every Thursday. We're off because of the 4th. He's coming on early with us. Les East, award-winning reporter for CrescentCitySports.com, covers Saints and Pels. He'll talk about Pels free agency with us at 8:32. So Ron Higgins at 8:02, Les East at 8:32. Right now, I want to talk more about the Manning Passing Academy. We touched on it on yesterday's show. Talked about what Joe Burrow had to say there at the Manning Passing Academy. And also touched on a little bit with Eli Manning, who was there as well. But I want to put a little bit of the focus on the two young men that I was able to talk to back on Friday during the media session for the Manning Passing Academy. Two of the stars. One is an established star of the Southland Conference, and another one is an emerging star who has a connection to LSU. We'll start with Chase Forcade. He is a four-year starter, soon-to-be four-year starter there at Nichols. They joked around when you're down there for the Manning Passing Academy, when you talk to the other counselors around there, guys that have come in from the Big Ten, the SEC, and elsewhere, they tell you that the guy who's the biggest star is actually Chase in town. Like, they go out to eat, or they'll go around doing whatever they do down there in Thibodeau, and people come up, and they don't even bother talking to the other guys. They just want to come up and talk to Chase. That's how much the undersized, star, gutty, dual-threat quarterback for the Colonels means to that community and to that university. He's been an integral part of helping Nichols go from winless team, the worst team in the Southland Conference, to a team that is winning a conference championship, winning playoff games for the first time in a generation, and being named the player of the year.
To try to put it in terms that I think make more sense to me, Chase Forcade is to Nichols what Terrence Broadway was to UL.
That's a great comparison. Bravo. Yes, Cody, that you're exactly correct. What Broadway meant when they were able to get Broadway. Now, they had some success before then, that first season, but what Broadway meant to them, and they were able to build around him. And let's be honest, the Cajuns have struggled to find a quarterback as good as Broadway since he left. I think everyone kind of took Broadway for granted. They're like, oh, they'll just throw someone out there. It doesn't matter. Nope, nope. And they're still looking for that quarterback. Nichols enters the season ranked number 13 in the FCS preseason poll by Athlon Sports. They're coming off a season where they won 9 games, won a share of the Southland title. Forcade was named Player of the Year. And this is what the young man had to say on what he's trying to do, leaving his mark there at Nichols State.
I feel like I've been working even harder, just with myself and just really getting it to the team as well. Just like I said, we're really working hard at what we do, and it's something that we really take pride in, just because of what happened last year. When, you know, we're not trying to stick to the second round anymore. We're trying to get even better every year, and I know we're only going to grow. I only know this school is going to grow and the football program is going to grow, but you know, I'm trying to leave a mark here. That's what I want to do, and that's what I try to do every day.
I think he's done that. I mean, as the starting quarterback, conference player of the year honors, conference championship, got him to back-to-back FCF playoff appearances as the starting quarterback, won a playoff game last year, the first time they've done that in like 40 years. He's definitely leaving his mark. He talked a lot on Friday. You know, this was the third straight year he's been at the camp. And that's not surprising that the hometown guy has been there, but it's meant a lot to him for him to continually be invited back to the Manning Passing Academy year in and year out. I mean, this past year, just this past weekend, they had the likes of Tua was supposed to be there. Trevor Lawrence was there. He wasn't part of the media session. You had Jake Fromm from Georgia, Joe Burrow from LSU. You have all these big-name guys there, and yet they still make a spot to make sure to have the in-state school guys, and in particular, they always make sure to invite Chase Forcade. This is what he said that he's learned working the Manning Passing Academy and working from the Mannings Eli, Archie, and Peyton and Cooper over the last couple of years?
Yeah, just how they come with it every day with the football, and just how they watch film, how they stay consistent with the work ethic, and just how they treat it every day, and how they come with it, and just like I said, that's 18-year vets, 15-year vets, and it's just two Super Bowl champs, three total. I mean, that's unbelievable. Just what they've been doing. It's just something that I really grasp. I really get the knowledge from.
Very humble young man. He's confident when you meet him. Confident, but yet very, very humble. He also talked what the Manning Passing Academy has meant to him and why is it so important to be part of the MPA.
I love it. Just getting to be with the Mannings, you know, for 3 years now, and kind of just really enjoying just being around that presence. You know, they're greats. That's great. That's legends over there. So that's what I like to be around. I like to be around guys that I learned a game from, and I knew I got my knowledge from them, and just knowing them for a long time, and then they invited me here again for 3 years, and just it's unbelievable. Yeah, I feel like it's my first year, just how they welcome us, and it's the same people every year, and they're organized, well organized, and just it's a great camp, great 24 years of a great camp, and it's something that you can't really get around the nation.
That's Chase 4K Nichols State, 4-year quarterback. Reigning player of the year in the Southland Conference. He also talked about his head coach. And we know Tim Rebo here locally because he was a very good assistant coach for the Raging Cajuns. He went to take over Nichols, which was an impossible task, and yet somehow Tim Rebo has been able to turn the worst team in the Southland Conference and one of the worst programs in the FCS and has made them a playoff team that wins games and wins conference championships, and he's done it in a short amount of time. Part of that's because he's such a good recruiter, but also part of that is he's a very good coach, and his star quarterback, Chase 4K, talked just about what Tim Rebo, the head coach of the Nichols State Colonels, brings to the program.
Listen, everything this man says is true, and he speaks right to me, and just like I said, he's a great person, great coach, and you know, just his message he brings to the team, that they really get it right when he says it, and you know, we really do what he says, and like I said, he's a great person. You know, I can go to him for whenever. You know, he's a great connection. You know, he knows a lot of guys, but like I said, I can't thank him enough for what he's done for this school and for myself, and you know, like I said, I love him to death. But he's a great coach, and just he brings a lot to this program. He does a lot for this program.
Chase 4K wasn't the only in-state star quarterback there. You know, we had talked about Joe Burrow being on yesterday. Other guys that were there, Justin McMillan was there from Tulane, former LSU quarterback. But also in attendance at the Manning Passing Academy, making his debut his first season as a camp counselor, was Cody Orgeron, the son of course, Ed O, LSU head coach. Now, McNeese is going through some changes. They're coming off a year where they were ranked as high as being in the top 10 in the FCF polls, but then faded down the stretch, losing to the likes of Southeastern Louisiana, Northwestern State, and others. Missed the playoffs, ended up being 6-5 overall. They had an overhaul there of the coaching staff. They brought in a South Florida assistant in Sterling Gilbert to be the new head man in charge. Cody Orgeron split time last year at quarterback. He's now already been named the starter this year, heading into fall camp. So he will lead their offense. And there's a lot of question marks. How good is this McNeese State team going to be? Athlon Sports has them ranked as number 22 in their preseason poll. That's probably about right because you don't know what you're going to get out of the Cowboys. New head coach, new coaching staff across the board. Kerry Joseph was even, they parted ways with him. He's now at Southeastern Louisiana. Guidry, the former head coach, he's at Southeastern Louisiana as well. There's a lot of question marks. And Cody Orgeron had an up-and-down year. Even when he did get a couple of starts under his belt there, it still was an up-and-down season. But one of the big things that's going to be a difference is that he's not going to have the opportunity to play with his brother Parker. And his brother Parker had his career derailed due to several concussions. He had to give up playing football. So Cordy Orgeron's going to have to play on there at McNeese State without his brother Parker.
It hurts, man, especially knowing, you know, how much potential he's had. It hurts to see the concussions and the injuries kind of slow him down. But in my opinion, he was one of the best receivers I've seen play in my whole life. I know that's a little biased because that's right. My twin. But, you know, he was a special receiver for sure. But God's got a different path for him, and he knows that.
You can tell it still bothers him a little bit that he won't be able to play because that was the whole thing. He couldn't wait to throw touchdown passes or throw passes to his brother. And now that's not going to happen. But Cody is having to deal with the responsibility of being the starting quarterback there at McNeese State. He's going to be looked to help lead this offense back to being a prolific offense as it has been in years past. I remember Cody Stroud being there putting up big numbers. So they're going to be looking to doing that moving forward with Cody Orgeron. So he's going to be in the spotlight. The pressure is going to be squarely on his shoulders. There's going to be no more splitting time. There's going to be no more of that distraction. He's going to be the guy, and he's going to be counted to help lead this offense, and that's a lot of pressure. Also, what can be deemed as having some pressure is the fact that he's Cody Orgeron. His father is Ed Orgeron, the head coach at LSU. And as anyone knows, that is a son of a coach and a son of a well-known coach. That comes with a little something extra, and that comes with a little extra responsibility. You can't go knock off. You can't go cut up like maybe the backup defensive back who doesn't have a famous dad can on the team. You have to be on top of your game on and off the field at all times because you're under more scrutiny because you are the son of the LSU head football coach. Cody talked a little bit about that, about being the son of a famous father.
I take pride in it, man. Be on my P's and Q's at all times, but at the same time, just being me, no pressure, just be myself and just work hard every day. And my dad's done a great job of building that last name, and it's up to us to keep it.
I love that. My dad's done a good job of building up that last name, and it's our job to keep it, my job to keep it. I was impressed. I was impressed with everyone that I talked to at the Manning Pass Academy last Friday in Thibodaux. But Cody's an impressive young man. Now, whether or not that will translate into big numbers for the Cowboys offense and more wins for McNeese State and have them back in the mix of being a legit Southland Conference championship squad and an FCF playoff contender remains to be seen. But he definitely says the right things and definitely appears to have the right mindset. We got to hit a break. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk about the holiday of all holidays concerning Major League Baseball. It occurred yesterday. Me and Cody are going to tell you all about it. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz is the producer extraordinaire, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1, 24 hours of sports coverage free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Reminder, coming up, hour number three, right around the corner, we'll have Les East from CrescentCitySports.com joining us, talking all things Pels. That'll be at 8:32, and then Ron Higgins from TigerDetails.com will talk all things LSU to lead off hour number three. That'll be at 8:02, so make sure to stay tuned for that. But before we wrap up hour number two here of this tremendous Tuesday edition of RP3 and Company, we need to go back a day. We need to pay proper homage to the holiday of all holidays in Major League Baseball. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Yesterday was Bobby Bonilla Day.
The smartest man in professional baseball, Bobby Bonilla.
The smartest man in the history of professional sports.
Just run through the specifics. We all know the deal here, but lay them out again because they are just that ridiculous. Only one team would ever do this.
And, of course, it was the New York Mets. The calendar has shifted July, ladies and gentlemen, and that can mean one thing. It's Bobby Bonilla Day. Why?
Here we go.
Money, money, money! 56-year-old Bobby Bonilla collected a check of $1,193,248.20.
For doing what?
For not playing baseball.
Mella is money.
He received that check from the New York Mets, as he has and will every July 1st from 2011 through 2035.
So he's got 16 more years of this.
16 more years of getting...
How old is Bobby Bonilla?
He is 56 years old.
Attaboy!
He gets a $1.2 million check every July 1st since 2011 all the way through 2035.
Here comes the money! Here we go!
How the hell, you're asking, is a 56-year-old man still getting paid millions of dollars every year by a Major League Baseball franchise? Well, the short answer is he got a contract from the New York Mets. Back in 2000, we'll take you back in the time machine. Back in the time machine, the Mets made the decision to buy out the remaining $5.9 million on Bobby Bonilla's contract. Now, Bobby Bo was a very good player back in the day. He was an all-star. He played for the Pittsburgh Pirates with Barry Bonds and Andy Van Slyke there in the early 90s. He gone on and went on and got himself a big contract from the New York Mets. However, instead of paying Bobby Bo the $5.9 million at the time, they could have simply cut him a check and said, Bobby, thank you for your services. We don't want you on our payroll anymore. Here's a check for nearly $6 million. Go on your way. Go to Barbados. Have a good time. The Mets made the decision to make annual payments of nearly $1.2 million for 25 years, starting July the 1st, 2011, including a negotiated 8% interest. Say what? His contract was only $5.9 million. And yet the Mets came up with a way, instead of paying that money right then, they're like, Bobby, we're a little short, my man. Why don't we do this? Instead of paying you the $6 million right now, because we don't have the $6 million, we're not carrying the $6 million. Hell, we don't even have a mill. But what we're going to do for you, my man, is starting in 2011 with that 8% interest, we're just going to pay you a check every year of $1.2 million from 2011 all the way until you're like 80 years old, until 2035.
And Bobby Bonilla quickly does a little math in his head.
Can you imagine being Bobby Bo in this meeting with your lawyer and your agent?
He said, what now?
He looks around and he probably goes, are these guys high?
Right.
Did they smoke crack? What's going on? Did they take crazy pills?
He's thinking like this is like such little faith from the Mets front office back then. They're just counting on Bobby Bonilla dying at an early age, I guess.
He'll be 72 years old when he gets that last check from the Mets.
That's the best.
The Mets will be paying Bobby Bonilla more this season than they would pay Pete Alonso and Jeff McNeil combined, and those are current players on the team.
Those guys should be mad.
Bonilla last played for the Mets in 1999. By the way, this is not the only contract Bobby Bo has with the Mets. He also has a second deferred contract plan with the Mets and Orioles that pays him $500,000 a year for 25 years. Those payments began in 2004. Whoever was Bobby Bo's agent, literally, if I'm an athlete, I'm going to them. I'm like, bro, I need you to be at the negotiation table with me. If I'm a football player, I'm going to find these guys, and I want them to negotiate my deal, and I want them to somehow negotiate with the Mets, too, even though I may not play baseball. Bobby Bo Bonilla Day, every July 1st, ladies and gentlemen. Good up for Bobby Bo. God bless him. We got to wrap up hour number two. Coming up, Ron Higgins from TigerDetails.com joins us right here on our K.
Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number three of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We've covered a lot of ground today. We've talked about NBA free agency, of course, still waiting on Kawhi Leonard to make a decision there. Touched on what the Pels were able to do in free agency. We also discussed LSU and the fact that Ed Orgeron has added a Hall of Famer to his staff in a essentially as a consultant in John Robinson. We'll talk more about that decision, as well as LSU football and where Coach O is ranked by Athlon Sports with our next guest. He is one of the best and most decorated sports journalists in the state of Louisiana history. He currently works for TigerDetails.com. He's our good friend, the one and only Ron Higgins. Ron, how you doing this morning, brother?
Good. Good morning, Roy. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. I didn't think we'd have any real LSU news to get to today, but sure enough, before the 4th of July holiday comes, we get a couple of kind of newsy items to discuss. So that's why I wanted to bring you on. Let's start with the decision to bring on the Hall of Famer, the former USC national championship winning coach and former Los Angeles Rams head coach Robinson as a special consultant to Ed O. Your thoughts on that hire and why that came to be?
Well, I mean, I don't think you can have, you know, never have as many, you know, I guess, intelligent football minds in a room as you want. I mean, I think it was a good hire. It's an advisory role. He's not recruiting, so there's no loss there because the guy will be 84 in July, and obviously he can't get out and recruit at 84. But it doesn't mean you have sort of a brilliant football mind. And I've always believed Ed likes to have somebody who's a mentor handy. And, you know, he always had Pete Jenkins, that was his mentor who was handy. And Pete retired a couple of years ago. But retired for Pete means he just went into private coaching work. Because Pete never really slows down either. But to have a guy that I guess he trusts and he knows, I mean, John Robinson's resume is unquestioned. But to have a guy to bounce ideas off of, I don't think that hurts. And obviously, the salary wasn't very much. I mean, this for a consultant part-time guy, it's not that much. And I know John Robinson didn't need the money. I think he just wanted an opportunity to get back in football, be around the team. And I think Ed was willing to do this for him. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I don't think it can hurt him. I think all I can do is help him.
We're talking with Ron Higgins of
Tiger.
We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, I agree with you. I also feel like Coach O likes to have as many smart guys in the room as possible. Like you said, he has the highest paid coordinator in the game in Dave Aranda running his defense. He brings in a young dynamic mind in Joe Brady from the New Orleans Saints to help open up their offense for his buddy Steve Ensminger. And now he hires a Hall of Famer to be a special consultant. What does that tell you about Coach O
and his development as a head coach from his days at Ole Miss to now?
That he's, he understands that he's coaching without ego. At Ole Miss, he was coaching at Ole Miss with ego, but he also coaching scared because he really didn't know what he was doing. And so he didn't really trust anybody. I mean, at Ole Miss, basically, he would call Pete Carroll from the practice field at Ole Miss. He would call him almost every day asking questions in the practice field because he didn't trust anybody else, and he didn't want anybody to know, but he really didn't know what he was doing. You know, I mean, basically, he gave a great interview at Ole Miss and got the job off a great interview, and then kind of realized he was in over his head. He didn't know how to be a head coach. And after all these years, he knows how to be a head coach. But he also understands who fits with me. Who can I get that helps what I'm doing? And I think O's matured a lot in that area. And it takes a lot for a coach to, you know, mature and know the game, but also coach without ego. And like, how can this? Who could help us in this area? Like, go and get Joe Brady. I mean. Oh, after last year, they weren't averaging enough points a game. You can't average, you know, I'm going to say 29 points a game because it's 32 if you count the A&M debacle, which was out of control. You can't average less than 30 points a game and win a national championship, ever. You have to average like 45 now. And he knows that. He knows he got to get an offense and speed it up and do some things that are in line with today's modern offense. And so, he went and got a guy who's, you know, 29 years old. I mean, this is kind of hilarious. You got a guy now 29, and you got a guy about ready to turn 84. It kind of shows you the dynamic that Ed Orgeron. It doesn't matter age. If he thinks he can help LSU's program, he's going to go see if he can go get him. I think that says a lot for Ed, that he's not that egotistical that and paranoid that everything has to be his idea.
We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, I have been immensely impressed with the decisions that Edo has made, and he's done a good job since being at LSU, even overcoming some of those early snafus like the loss at home to Troy and then the lopsided loss in Mississippi State. He's been able to turn things around. They're coming off a 10-win season. They're in the mix for the college football playoff. They're going to start the preseason ranked top 10. So I want to ask you about Athlon Sports ranking all the coaches. They have Ed O ranked as the 51st best coach in the country and only the 8th best in the SEC. Your thoughts on those rankings?
Well, they still don't believe him. They don't believe it. They still think Ed Orgeron is the guy at Ole Miss. They do. They still think Ed Orgeron is back from 10 years ago. And they think he stumbled into a lucky situation, which he kind of did. But he's built on that situation. This is a better program than when he took it over. And yeah, he had some early stumbles, you know. We've discussed, you know, over and over the decision to hire Matt Canada. But he's overcome that, and he's continued to recruit. Ed's always been able to recruit. But, you know, his thing is, what I like about him, he assesses at the end of every year, and like, how can we get better? Because, yeah, he understands what it takes to win. He understands what it takes to beat Alabama. He hasn't done it yet, but he understands what it takes. Because he understands if you beat Alabama, more likely you can win a national championship. And so it's very basic stuff, you know. Let's find more, you know, we need more physical linemen on both sides of the ball than Alabama has. And all the rest of the stuff will take care of itself. I think Ed's done a really good job, and they can keep ranking eighth in the SEC, which is ridiculous, and 51st. And I've seen other rankings that have been better for Ed, that they jumped him up like 32 positions in 1 year. Everything's subjective. The Athlon had to stick him somewhere, but eighth in the SEC is absurd. You know, I don't know who's ahead of him, but I'm guessing
Will Muschamp. Will Muschamp's ahead of him, and Mark Stoops is ahead of him. And then, you know, the top of the list is obviously in the SEC is Saban, followed by Jimbo, and then Kirby, and then Dan Mullen, then Gus Malzahn, Stoops, and then Will Muschamp.
Okay. What has Will Muschamp won?
There we go.
Huh? What was he won? He got fired at Florida because he couldn't get in a lot, didn't have an offense. In South Carolina, he didn't have an offense until Jake Bentley got there. Okay, Gus Malzahn. Let's see. Let's go back to that day at Auburn LSU with Les Miles getting fired. That was almost like a loser leave town game. But Gus Malzahn could have gotten easily as fired as Les Miles did, but somehow hung on and got a contract extension about a year ago, an exorbitant amount, which Auburn fans are still angry about because they still haven't really done anything. So that's another thing right there, okay? Dan Mullen, okay? Let's talk Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen did a nice job in Starkville, but it remains to be seen what he going to do to Florida. I mean, they came out, yeah, he beat LSU last year. They had some nice wins, but, you know, this guy's supposed to be the quarterback whisperer, and, you know, Khalid Frank is the best they got. He got a little bit better at the end of the year, but still nothing dynamic. So, I mean, I don't get it. I understand Jimbo. He's a proven commodity. Nick's unquestionable. I mean, what Kirby Smart has done his first few years is really good. I would move Ed up at least to the third or fourth best. I mean, I know Kirby, you know, was the SEC championship game, but I would move up Ed ahead of a lot of those people. But again, it's still that image of, you know, Ed Orgeron from Ole Miss, Ed Orgeron, stereotype, Ed Orgeron, the big dumb Cajun, which really that's the one that really pisses me off the most. But they look at Ed, they look at his gravelly voice, they look at his demeanor, and they think he's just this big dumb Cajun just off a Piro. It just pisses me off so bad. Because this guy knows football. He knows football, and he understands how much he's grown the past 10 years, the mistakes he made, and what he's done to fix it, and how he's grown. And I hope he wins just for that standpoint. To me, the best day ever would be Ed Orgeron won SEC Coach of the Year or National Coach of the Year. You know, and it would give him every right if he wanted to tell everyone's detractors to shove it. But he's too nice of a guy, and he's too friendly of a guy to do that. But if he was thinking that, I wouldn't blame him.
We're talking with Ron Higgins here from TigerDetails.com on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, you were at the Manning Passing Academy with me on Friday. Joe Burrow was there. Of course, he had a big huddle of folks around him, media people around him. Joe still is a little nervous. He doesn't necessarily enjoy being interviewed all that much, but he is a straight shooter. What impressions did you get from Joe at the Manning Passing Academy in Thibodaux on Friday?
Well, one, that he threw the ball really well. I know that. But two, I think Joe kind of, he's used to the media stuff. You know, having grown up the son of a football coach, which will be a really good bonus this year because his dad finally retired as defensive coordinator at the University of Ohio, and now his dad can also break down film with him, which is pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
I like Joe from day one. I always thought he looked like a quarterback when he got to campus. He looked like a physical quarterback. Mentally, he's a smart guy, and I think he knows how to handle situations. And I think he's really excited by the new offense because I know it fits his wheelhouse. I just think the job he did last year was incredibly, was fantastic. Considering he was thrown into a new situation with new teammates and an offense that really wouldn't into his skill set or wasn't comfortable with it, but I mean, I know it's amazing to some people when you hear a quarterback say this, but, you know, he hadn't gotten under center to take a snap ever, basically. And that tells you where football is now. I mean, you've got kids from out of high school who've been, you know, been in spread formations and taken snaps in a shotgun formation since they were, you know, started playing football. They've never gotten under center. And for anybody who's ever, you know, played quarterback and understands what I'm talking about, it's a whole different view when you're 6-7 yards back taking the snap than when you're under a center. And there's so many things that can go wrong when you're under center. You can, you know, you can fumble the snap. Yeah, I mean, you can trip over a lineman's foot. I mean, there's a ton. You know, you have your, if you, when you're dropping back to pass, you have your back to the rush as you're going back. You have all different kinds of footwork. You're closer to the line. You can actually see the defensive faces, and if they can talk trash to you, you can hear it. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong when you're on the line. And if you've never taken a snap under the center, I mean, you have to do it all of a sudden. You have to learn it like in about a month and a half, which he did. It's unbelievable, and he did it. You know, and you look at his stats for the year. He almost took for 3,000 yards and had a great TD interception ratio. Was LSU's third leading rusher by the end of the year. I think he had one of the best years ever quarterback in recent memory at LSU, and it kind of went unnoticed.
Ron, real quick before we let you get out of here, we're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com here in the ARCO Equipment Hotline. I want to get your thoughts. There was the teleconference last week with the SEC basketball coaches, men's basketball coaches. Will Wade talked and addressed the media and talked about plethora of things. Your takeaway on what you heard from Will Wade during the media session with the teleconference last week?
I'm kind of, you know, I felt like a Will Wade was kind of like full speed ahead. It was kind of the same Will Wade I heard it in Destin a few months ago. You know, in Destin he had like two separate sessions. He had one with all the media when he tried to address everything he could about all the allegations. And he had another one with Louisiana media talking about his upcoming team. I think he's really excited by his team, upcoming team. I think he likes it. You know, right now they're unknown. Just will they have enough size, up front to compete? And I think they will. I think they could. I don't know if they get back to the Sweet 16, but I think they could get back to the NCAA tournament. And I think a key for them is, having Skylar Mays back as a seasoned senior leader, a guy who just kind of steadies a team. And he's kind of like, you know, he's a little like the lone leader out there now that Tremont's gone. So I think Will's excited by the upcoming season. And, you know, I also think, you know, he's not going to say, but I think he's prepared for the onslaught of questions that will never go away, and prepared for, for what he'll hear at road games screamed at him and his team. And I'm sure it's something he's preparing his team for, because it's not gonna be pretty. They'll be called everything in the book, that's the nature of college sports, you know. The ugly part of it is if you're alleged to do something wrong, even though you've been proven guilty yet, but if you're alleged to do something wrong, then you're guilty in the eyes of the public, and they're going to let you hear about it. That's something you'll have to deal with, maybe for the rest of his career.
Ron, appreciate you making time for us. As always, have a happy 4th of July extended weekend. Get you some rest, brother, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care. We'll see you.
Ron Higgins, TigerDetails.com, joining us here, courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. When we come back, Cody Schutz is going to take the stage. Woo! Could it be women's national team soccer talk time? Oh, I think so. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing.
And that it's that time of the show, ladies and gentlemen. We've covered a slew of topics. A plethora of headlines have been discussed. But we've saved possibly the best for this next segment. As Cody Schutz, producer extraordinaire, diehard LSU and Saints fan, the pride of Point Coupee, also, you're not going to find a bigger fan of the U.S. women's national team for soccer.
I think the pride of Point Coupee is going to be Ernest Gaines. It's probably where, you know, like, world-renowned author, probably going to be the pride of Point Coupee. But neither here nor there.
I made a bold statement, and I'm sticking by it.
Fair enough.
But the floor is yours, sir. Give us our U.S. women's national team World Cup soccer update.
Yeah, don't mind if I do. The Women's World Cup is down to four teams.
All final four.
There are only four teams left. We are in the semifinals. Netherlands and Sweden. That's who's hanging out on the other side of the bracket. While we have today at 2 p.m. kickoff for a huge matchup against the United States and England. That's going to be a big showdown. This matchup has kind of been brewing for a while here. I am very, very excited for it. Very confident, though. The United States, they looked a little bit better in their last game out. You know, they're still, they haven't.
That was the match versus Vive la France?
La France, yes. They won that game 2-1. It was a good game, and I think they looked better in that game than they did in the previous game against, was it Spain, they played previously. So I think things are looking okay. This is going to be, I think, maybe an even tougher opponent than France. The pressure will be on. I can only hope that I get home in time to at least catch the second half of this game.
Would you dare make a prediction right now?
Bold. United States wins this 3-1.
Oh, there it is. USA.
All the way. And the men won as well. The men beat Curacao in the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup to move on. So we'll see. They're still playing as well.
I can't wait for them to get knocked out of the World Cup stage in the next World Cup.
Most likely.
When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll bring it on Les East at CrescentCitySports.com, breaking all things Pelicans free agency for us right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also catch us on the Simulcast Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air, 24 hours of sports coverage. We're part of it. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We led off today's show talking about NBA free agency. It's been fast and furious since it opened at 6 o'clock. Of course, the majority of those deals were already taken care of, right? You don't all of a sudden have a four-year, $145 million deal in place at 6:02. It's just a farce that these teams are not talking to one another until 6 p.m. on Sunday. But NBA free agency was fast and furious. Still waiting on Kawhi Leonard to figure out what he's going to do. But we have seen what the Pels have done. They got themselves not one, not two, but three. Got two free agents and then made a sensational trade. We're going to dive deeper into what the Pels have done in free agency with our next guest. He is an award-winning columnist that covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans for outlets like CrescentCitySports.com and Saturday Down South. It's the one and only Les East. Les, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm doing well, Raymond. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate you coming on with us a little bit earlier this week, because obviously we have the 4th of July holiday later this week when we typically would have you on. But we got plenty to talk about. Let's start with the moves that the Pelicans made starting on Sunday. I want to dive in a little bit more about the stretch four, the power forward that can shoot three-pointers that they got from the EuroLeague. What can you tell us about the first move in free agency that the Pels made on Sunday?
Well, I don't know a lot about the guy. Obviously, I haven't seen him play because he's been over in the EuroLeague, but he does sound like one of the better players from over there who would have been available. He's resisted opportunities to come to the NBA sooner. I assume that's because he felt like he needed a little more seasoning before he was ready to compete in the NBA. And I think it's at least a mini coup for the Pelicans to be able to get him, because I'm not sure a lot of teams realized that he was prepared to finally make that jump to the NBA. But a big guy who can also shoot, and I think that's a theme we're starting to see here with the Pelicans, because that's something they haven't really had except for the brief time that they had Nikola Mirotic here, who coincidentally is heading over to Europe at this point. But, you know, I think that was a good economical piece. It's not a guy who's going to make all the difference in the world, but I think it supplements in a good way everything else that they've been doing over these last few weeks, which is obviously quite a bit.
We're talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com and SaturdaysDownSouth.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, the real surprise move in a lot of the free agency, especially for the Pels, was the fact that they were able to convince one of the most coveted three-point shooters on the market in J.J. Redick to come to the Pels on a two-year deal. How surprising was that for you, and what does that say about the type of culture that David Griffin is building with New Orleans, where they can get someone like J.J. Redick?
Yeah, I think that was a good move as well. You know, his last couple of free agent contracts were one-year deals. He's getting into his upper 30s, so I don't know if maybe that two-year deal was something that some teams might have hesitated on, but it fits well for the Pelicans, I think. Yeah, I believe you and I talked sometime between the lottery and the draft about how Griffin had two options. He could either try and get a lot of draft choices for Davis and stockpile a lot of guys that are Zion Williamson's age and let them grow together, or he could try and balance things a little bit more and still get some young players around Williamson, but also get some savvy veterans in there so that the team could compete for the playoffs right away, mentor the young players, and still be set up to mature on an upward trajectory for the foreseeable future. And Griffin wisely chose the second option, and I think J.J. Redick is an important part of that, in that he, in addition to bringing much-needed three-point shooting, he can be a mentor for younger players. He's a well-regarded veteran who has helped young players on previous teams, including the 76ers last year, and enables them to compete right away. And yet we've also seen with all the young players from the Lakers as well as the draft choices, they're set up to mature on a consistent basis for an extended period of time. So I think early on they brought in a lot of youthful people, and then free agency gives them the opportunity to add some a couple of much-needed veterans who are can be mentors to these younger players, and J.J. Redick, I think, fits that ideally.
We're speaking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com and SaturdayDownSouth.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, David Griffin, though, was not done working his magic. He took the two future second-round picks that he got from Golden State on draft night after trading them a second-rounder, and essentially took those free picks and flipped it into a guy that's going to come in and be a starting center and a mentor to the young draft pick Hayes out of Texas, as well as probably mentor Zion Williamson in Derek Favors. How much of a coup was that for David Griffin getting the big fellow from the Utah Jazz?
Well, I think it's a great move, and I think it's, you know, Favors, it seems like every time they've played the Pelicans over the last couple of years, he's had big games both in New Orleans and Salt Lake City. But Jazz has been a difficult matchup for the Pelicans in recent years, and he's been a big part of that. But I think he's also an example of how Griffin looked at all of the potential ways to improve this roster and tried to utilize any that were useful, and that was trades and draft choices and future draft choices and free agency and flipping those second-round picks from the Warriors for a guy like Derek Favors is a steal, but it's also recognition on Griffin's part that the Jazz was going to have to let Favors go anyway, that he wasn't going to re-sign with them. And so that they saw that they were going to be able to get him at a bargain basement price, and he took advantage of that and basically gave up assets that it was found money. It was something that they didn't even have prior to the draft. So that was a shrewd move on his part. But as a player, you know, Favors gives them their starting center, a guy who's a 4/5, and that's what the league is now. Other than maybe point guard, everybody's a slash. They play multiple positions. And his ability to play both the 4 and the 5, but especially to start at the 5, is very significant. It buys them a little time with Hayes. It gives them a mentor for Hayes as well as Williamson. He can play with Williamson, which he'll do primarily and presumably at the beginning and end of games, but he can also back up Williamson at the 4. So it just, if you're looking at this as a jigsaw puzzle, that is a corner piece, and it just fits perfectly with all the surrounding pieces.
We're talking with Les East, covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans for CrescentCitySports.com as well as SaturdayDownSouth.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, it feels like Griff's going to make maybe another little minor move. Do you anticipate that happening within the next week? And with all the new pieces they have, is there a possibility that Etuan Moore could be on the move?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. You know, Etuan's value was he played a lot of guard last year, but he's really more of a 3 than a 2. He's an outside shooter and a pretty good scorer. But with Brandon Ingram coming in, Drew Holiday, you know, playing the 2 a lot, he doesn't have a great deal of value right now, less value to this team than he had previously. So I think he definitely could be on the move. If they trade him, you know, that gives them an asset that they can utilize beyond free agency where they're starting to run low on funds. So I think that's definitely a piece that could be key to any future moves. I think they would like to have a little more depth at point guard, maybe a veteran point guard to mentor and back up Lonzo Ball. Drew Holiday will play there some, but I think he's going to be more of a 2 than a 1. And so maybe it'll be a combo guard they bring in who can also back up Drew in addition to being a backup to Lonzo Ball. And, of course, they have Josh Hart also will be backing up Drew Holiday. So I think somewhere in the backcourt they need to add another piece or two. Moving Etuan Moore is something that can definitely help them in further acquisitions. So I don't think they're done yet. I think they're getting close. I don't know if it will happen immediately. The Davis trade doesn't become official until Saturday. There's always a trickle-down effect in free agency, so some of these lesser moves might take a little longer to happen until some of these bigger moves shake out. So the pace that's been set over these last couple of weeks might not be what we see going forward, but I don't think they're done yet.
We're talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com and SaturdayDownSouth.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, you mentioned backup point guard, but they have all the depth at the number 2. They got Josh Hart. They got the young man out of Vitek there. You got J.J. Redick now, who can play the 2 or the 3. You got Ingram. You have a great starting lineup. You have a nice mix of vets and rookies, young players under the age of 24 that they have there. But with free agency being fast and furious and guys coming off the board like Elfrid Payton, who played for the Pels last year, signing that 2-year deal to go play for the Knicks, will they try to make a move in free agency for that point guard, backup point guard spot, or do you think they flip Etuan Moore into a backup veteran point guard?
Well, I think it just depends on what's out there, what they can get on the free agent market for what they have to spend and what other teams are willing to give up for more. And I think Moore's value could go up as time goes on, as some teams figure out they're not going to be able to get what they had hoped for in free agency. They might be willing to spend a little more for Etwan Moore. So I think that's why Griffin's going to probably get be patient with making another move, because he wants to see whether there's better value in a trade for Moore or in free agency, and that may change over time for the better. And I should also mention that as we look at the point guard position, you know, Frank Jackson is a guy who showed some potential last year. He's had so many injuries over the last few years, beginning with his last year at Duke, and then with the Pelicans. But he got a lot of playing time late last year after a lot of injuries and the Davis trade demand, and he showed a lot of ability. So I think he's a guy who potentially could be in the mix for some playing time at the point guard.
Les, appreciate your time as always, brother. Enjoy the 4th of July weekend. Get you some rest. I know you'll be busy covering all things Pels, but try to enjoy a little bit of the extended holiday weekend, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Raymond. Me too.
It's Les East. CrescentCitySports.com, SaturdayDownSouth.com. Covers the Pels and the Saints, bringing down all the moves the New Orleans Pelicans made in free agency and still will be making. He still says there's another move coming. Might be a trade, but they're not done by any stretch of the imagination. We got to hit a break. We'll wrap up today's show after this on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We've been keeping you updated last week and the early part of this week about UL baseball coach Tony Robichaux, who wrapped up his 25th year with the Raging Cajuns a few months back. A few weeks ago, he suffered a heart attack that required to have open-heart surgery, and then he was forced to have yet another procedure on Sunday down at Ochsner Health Center in New Orleans. He remains in intensive care right now, and he remains in critical condition due to complications from the heart attack that he suffered a few weeks ago. Friends and family of Coach Robe will be gathering for a prayer service and a rosary tonight at Russo Park. That will begin at 6:30. So friends and family of Raging Cajun baseball coach Tony Robichaux will be gathering for a prayer service and rosary tonight at Russo Park, home of the Raging Cajuns, starting at 6:30 p.m. All are welcome to attend. So once again, we're going to keep Coach Robe and his family and the Raging Cajuns family in our thoughts and prayers. If you have the time to go out there and take part in the prayer service, in the rosary, by all means do so. It's open to the public. If you're a fan of the program, you're a fan of Coach Robe, or you just want to show your support by going out there and taking part in the prayer service, by all means, please do so. It's free and all are welcome to attend. So that'll be once again tonight at Russo Park at 6:30 p.m. I want to thank all of our guests today, Ron Higgins from TigerDetails.com for joining us. I also want to thank Les East, who we just wrapped up, from CrescentCitySports.com, talking all things New Orleans Pelicans. Just a reminder for tonight, we'll have the Jordy Holberg show this afternoon from 2 to 4 like normal with Uncle Jordy. Then it'll be Bumper to Bumper Sports from 4 to 6:30. I'm sorry, that'll be actually 4 to 7 o'clock because the good brother Ben Love will be broadcasting live from Billy's Boudin and Cracklins, the new location there in Lafayette. We did the show yesterday live from Billy's. They were great. They were able to set us up there. They're having the soft opening right now. You got to make sure to go check out the Pepper Jack Boudin balls. Get some of the fresh Boudin they have there. Ben will be there from 4 to 7 today, live from Billy's Boudin and Cracklins, right there off the Pont de Mouton exit. That's exit 1C off of I-49, connected to the Exxon on the Run station. make sure to go check that out and listen for Bumper to Bumper Sports Live. So we'll have Bumper to Bumper Sports, and then that'll lead us right into Astros pregame at 7 o'clock, and then first pitch for Astros tonight will be 7:10. Astros at Rockies. It's a two-game set for the Stros before they return home for a three-game set against the Anaheim Angels. Cody, let's go back to the poll question. We got it up at 1037thegame.com. We put it up there yesterday. It's getting even more traction today based on a couple of the conversations that you and I had throughout the show, including our discussion with Ron Higgins about Coach O and where he's ranked. Once again, just to give you a reminder here, Athlon Sports released their rankings for football coaches at the FBS level, 130. Coach O ranked 51st in the entire country and ranked number 8 in the SEC behind the likes of Will Muschamp and Mark Stoops. So we asked you yesterday on our poll question there located on 1037thegame.com, right hand of the homepage, do you think he's ranked properly or not? Last time we checked, 95% said that he was not.
Yes.
Ranked
I can confirm. I can confirm that since then it has dropped to 88% that say yes, he is better than the 51st head coach in college football. So I do have 88% as of last check, but right now, for whatever reason, I can't get it to load.
That's because, you know why? Because so many people are taking part in the poll question.
The flooding of the traffic on the website, that's the issue.
That's right. They want to take part in the RP3 and Company poll question that's available on 1037thegame.com.
If it comes up during Chip Shots here, we'll update it then.
That's right. Up next, Chip Shots with Rob Spires is coming up. Your weekly fix of all things golf. Once again, reminder, prayer service and rosary being held for Coach Tony Robichaud, who remains in critical condition at Ochsner Medical Center in New Orleans following a second surgery due to a heart attack. If you want to take part in it, you can. Everyone's welcome to attend. It's going to be right there at Russo Park tonight at 6:30. Tremendous show. Y'all be safe out there. We'll talk to you tomorrow right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.